Tales of the Left Hand, Book 3, written and read by John Maher. The story so far. Carla, now recovered from her assassination attempt, resolves to head down to the Abbey's main gate to see Allie Fane and her entourage off. Chapter 34. Wick gave Carla a concerned look as he collected their plates from the table.
"I'll take these back to the kitchen, mistress. Then we can head down. You're sure you're up to this? It was only this time yesterday that you were..."
"I'm fine, really," Carla assured him. "This is my first full meal in a day. It's all I really needed."
The guard shrugged and left Carla and Grievous alone. They were sitting at the end of one of the long tables in the dining hall. The monks had kept their distance from them, though she suspected that was as much due to Wick and Grievous hovering around her like a pair of nesting hawks, glaring at anyone who looked as if they might approach her to ask a question. "Everyone here will have 1,000 questions for you," the abbot had told her, and she could see those questions in the eyes of each monk.
"You would draw less attention if you re-established your disguise," Grievous commented, seeing what she saw.
"No, they know what I am now. To try to hide it again would be, I don't know, an insult to their intelligence?"
Grievous shrugged, acknowledging her point.
"And it feels good to let the disguise go for a little while," she added. "It's like taking off a pair of boots you've worn for 3 days straight."
"Ah, that comparison I can understand," Grievous replied.
"Are you sure you won't join us to see them off?" she asked him. "The map archive isn't going anywhere, and you'll have it all to yourself for once."
"All the more reason to be doubling my efforts, and I have more than maps to study now."
Grievous tapped the transcript of Strabo's interview on the table next to him.
"When will you be leaving for Maipo?"
"Dutram and I agreed on 2 weeks for him to get the cutlass seaworthy," Carla replied. "Factoring travel time back to Maipur into everything, I expect to be here another 5 days. You've chosen to remain, then?"
Grievous paused.
"I have not yet decided. And as you say, I have 5 days to make that decision."
"I'm sorry that I couldn't tell..."
The old Sabrian held up a hand.
"No. Do not apologize twice, my friend. You had your duty, and you have followed it to the best of your ability."
He rose from the table as Wick returned, tucking the transcript under his arm.
"Now I must decide where my own duty lies."
He bowed formally to her and strode toward the hallway that led to the men's dormitory.
"What did he mean by that?" Wick asked as Carla got up from the table.
"I'm not sure," Carla replied, puzzling over Grievous's last sentence. "Where my own duty lies? What would Tesca have made of that?"
She squinted in the bright sunlight as they left the dining hall and gently refused Wick's offered arm.
"I'm really fine, Wick. A little tired is all."
"As you say, mistress."
They walked in silence for a short time, then,
"I didn't see Jordan at breakfast."
"He's still got the punishment Brother Hallam assigned him when we first arrived," Carla told him. "Since he's not working in the kitchens today, he should be down at the stables."
"Oh, he's still doing that, even after..."
Wick glanced around to make sure no one else was within earshot.
"After he's learned who Sonny is?"
Carla chuckled. "Did you expect him to throw down his shovel and tell the monks he's not doing menial chores anymore?"
"Well, when you put it that way," Wick replied. "He does finish the work put to him. I'll give him that."
They passed through the wall from Midgate to Lowgate. Ahead of them, the courtyard in front of the entryway was buzzing with activity, more than she'd seen in some time. Looking at the battlements above the gate, she counted a half dozen monks up there, along with a tall man with white hair and beard that she didn't recognize at first. Then she realized it was Abbot Banbrook, still dressed for kitchen duty, and she wondered what could be going on that was important enough to draw him away from those labors. On the ground in front of the heavy wooden doors, another cluster of people milled about, but not all of these were monks.
She recognized Ali and Benito among them at once, tying packs onto their horses. And then, through a gap in the crowd, she saw Clegg also readying his horse, and for a moment, her pace faltered.
"Mistress?"
"I'm fine. I know what Clegg did, but seeing him down there with her, you're never quite ready to see such betrayal in the flesh."
"We don't have to go down there, mistress."
She took a deep breath. "No, we do." Their approach was noted from some distance away. Her hair was too distinct to be overlooked. One by one, the monks at the gate turned to look at her, and as their attention turned, so did Allie's. Her puzzled expression flashed into shock to see Carla alive, much less walking down the road on her own power. But she recovered quickly enough, and her bemused smile was firmly in place by the time Carla had reached her. Benito looked sullen, disappointed to be leaving before finding what he sought, his expression turning wary when he saw them. Clegg hadn't seen them yet. Carla knew the cook's eyes weren't the best, and he was focused on securing one of his bags to his horse. Allie didn't bother to warn him of Carla's approach, which Carla found odd until she remembered Allie's love of spectacle. "She wants to see this confrontation," Carla thought. "So be it."
"Leaving so soon, Clegg?" Carla called when she was some 10 feet away.
The old cook whirled at the sound of her voice, staring at her in disbelief. There was shock and surprise in his face, but what hurt was what she didn't see. Remorse. She took a deep breath, absorbing that pain before continuing.
"It was a foolish question, I suppose. We both know why you're leaving."
Clegg shrugged.
"Aye, lass, that we do."
"How long have you been working for the Fanes?"
"Not that long," the cook admitted. "Started just a little after Jolly died."
Carla nodded. "When you couldn't find work?"
"Aye, they get me back on board the Cutlass, and I send them word where the ship goes, who comes aboard. A simple arrangement."
"Was poisoning one of your closest friends part of that?"
His expression turned hard.
"Friends? What good has being your friend ever done me?"
Finally released after so long, his anger began to flow in a tight, hissing tirade.
"You don't even know, do you? The last time I helped you was when you jumped ship, and I'm left behind to answer for it. I suppose I should have thanked that precious left hand of yours when I had the chance," he sneered. "If he hadn't sliced open Jolly's leg, I wouldn't have been the one to sew it up, and that's the only thing that kept me from being fed to the harbor fish. Jolly's forgiveness only went so far, though. He might have spared my life, but he didn't lift a finger when I caught a few beatings from the rest of the crew. Got pushed down the galley steps more than once, too. But that's not the worst of it."
Carla kept her face still, giving him no response. This only stoked his anger to new heights.
"You know what happens to murderers in Kohane?" he snapped.
Carla nodded. "They're hanged from the Eisenteeth."
"Aye, they dance the jerkneck jangle over the water where the entire city can watch. Then they're left up there till the neck rots through. The stinking Quadites take bets on the day and time the body falls. Did you know that?"
"Yes, and if the body lands on a passing ship, tradition says the winner gets double. But both head and body have to land on deck for it to count. What's your point?"
"My point? My point is that one morning I walk into Jolly's cabin to see him lying there in a pool of his own blood, a second smile carved below his beard. And the city watch takes me in for questioning about it. Weren't gentle with those questions neither. Tried to get me to confess to Jolly's murder. Me! Wasn't like there was anyone aboard the Cutlass who'd speak on my behalf, was there? The way they saw it, all of this was my fault anyway. So, there I am, wondering if I'm about to have that last dance over the harbour. I thought, well, at least Carla'd have spoken up for me, if she hadn't died the same day as Jolly, when word comes down from on high that Jolly's murderer's been killed while trying to assassinate the Duke. And just like that, I'm tossed back on the street. No apology, no compensation. Then, when I get back to the Cutlass, the Duke's already taken possession of her. Ships in dry dock, crew sent packing. By then, the lads had spread the word through Harborside about me, of course, Not a single ship would take me on. And after all that, you know, I'm still not angry at you. No, not until 2 weeks later. I'm out on the street, not a copper to my name, picking through garbage for food, when I hear some folk talking about how you've been strolling through the city here and there, green hair for all to see. Not only are you alive, you're not even on the run. Instead, you're living high above the waterline, the favorite pet of that scrumping duke.
Wick stepped forward, his eyes flashing.
You've said enough, old man.
It's all right, Wick, Carla replied. He's clearly been wanting to say that for a long time. Probably rehearsed it, didn't you, Clegg?
Clegg blinked at her, unprepared for this cold reply.
You're probably thinking this is where I start apologizing to you, Carla went on, where I'm supposed to break down in tears and say how bad it was for you, that I tried to find you. That's how it's always played out in your mind, hasn't it? Well, I did try to find you, but it seemed as if you'd already left the quad, which made sense.
She glanced at Allie Fane.
Perhaps someone didn't want you found. Perhaps I just didn't look in the right places. But I'm not going to apologize to you, Clegg. Not for a single thing, because I told you all of that back on the Cutlass, and it clearly didn't mean anything to you, seeing as how you've tried to kill me twice since then.
Wick glanced at her.
Twice?
Carla nodded. I've had a lot of time to think yesterday, recovering from the willow bark. I couldn't imagine how Clegg could do that to me when he'd saved my life back on the Cutlass. Tovas was half a second from killing me before he got shot. Then I began to think about how much of a coincidence it was that Clegg was there just in the nick of time. She watched Clegg's face for alarm or denial and found none. You talked him into attacking me, didn't you?
Clegg shrugged.
Didn't take much to talk the fool into it. He was about 5 minutes from working himself up to it anyway.
So why'd you interfere in your own plan?
Clegg smiled.
Well, after he and his mate started off, I remembered what you and the Sabrian were hunting for.
He chuckled.
If you died, you died. But if I could put you in my debt...
Wick surged forward, reaching for him.
You sack of...
No, Carla called, stepping between them. You start something here, the monks will throw you out as well. That's what he wants.
Clegg gave Wick a cheerful wink as the guard retreated, breathing heavily.
Carla looked back at Clegg. All right, old man. Let's review your accomplishments since you began working for the Fanes. First, you haven't learned anything Allie didn't already know. Second, you didn't get so much as a look at Grievous's half of the map. And third, you failed to kill me twice. With that sort of success rate, how valuable do you think you are to her?
Clegg looked nervous for the first time, throwing Allie a quick glance.
Well, I got word back to Drax and Fane where the Cutlass was bound. Hid a few carrier pigeons among the squab that Dutrom likes so much.
Behind Clegg, Allie Fane closed her eyes in a slow wince as Clegg laughed.
Like as not, the Osprey's already waiting in my poor.
Carla's smile widened. Now, that is something I didn't know. Thank you, Clegg.
As the old cook sputtered, embarrassed and angry, she smiled at Allie.
Are you sure he's really working for you?
You use what you find in the toolbox, Allie replied with a shrug. Clegg, you're done talking. Finish with your damn horse and head over to the registry to collect her weapons. Benito, go with him.
Allie looked back at Carla as the two men moved off.
Pieces exchanged, gambits played, but the game goes on.
Is this really just a game to you? Carla asked.
The only one worth playing anymore.
For an instant, Allie's wide smile turned bittersweet.
Enjoy the rest of your time here, Carla. I'll be waiting for you in my poor.
And with that, she turned away, leading her horse toward the registry. Wick made a frustrated sigh after she was out of earshot.
I can't stand seeing them all ride out of here like this.
It's better this way, Carla replied. Better to see Clegg's back than feel his dagger in ours. We'll get another chance to settle scores with him, I dare say.
I'd be glad for that, mistress. But with every Bravo and sellsword in my poor on the road watching for us, I'm not sure we'll get that chance.
That will only happen once Allie gets to my poor, Carola said. What she wants is for us to cower behind the Abbey's walls, afraid to move, while she lays her plans.
Wick nodded. So, we change our plans before hers are in place?
Carola chewed her lip, thinking. The road is the quickest way to my poor, but I doubt it's the only way. And more to the point, the city of Mypoor isn't the only way off this island either. This isn't the quad where everything has to go in and out through Kohane.
You want to take another ship home and leave the Cutlass behind?
Wick asked, incredulous. I'm considering it, Carola said. The mission is to get Jordan to Kohane. How that happens doesn't really matter. We could also hire a boat to take us into Mypoor itself. Come right up alongside the Cutlass and climb aboard that way. We skip the land route entirely. All of Allie's work is wasted.
Wick laughed.
But if Clegg's boast is right, then the Osprey is in the harbor as well, and I know the Cutlass can't outrun her. Then she paused as an idle thought struck her, a reminder of what Grievous had said to her back in Mypoor. Any ship you are aboard becomes the most powerful in the Freeze. For a moment, she considered the idea.
Head for the quad and see if the Osprey comes after us, she thought. Then let her get in close and surprise her with a full broadside, just like we did to Sidois. That could work, if I can figure out what went wrong the last time.
Then she dismissed the notion with a shake of her head.
No, that's far too dangerous. I do have to figure out what went wrong, but deliberately taking the Cutlass into another battle with the Duke's heir on board? She gave a rueful chuckle. Sounds like something Ferran would suggest.
Mistress?
I'm fine, Wick, just considering our options. In any case, it'll take Allie at least a day before she can get back to Mypoor, and her family doesn't have the kind of power they do back home, so she won't be able to snap her fingers and instantly turn the road into a death trap. That gives us some time, so we're not dashing out of here with a half-baked plan. She glanced up toward the battlements. I need to talk to the abbot.
When they were halfway up the stairs, Wick tapped Carola on the arm.
Mistress, before we go any further, best change your hair. The monks might be getting used to the green, but if any of that lot outside sees it...
Carola winced. Good catch. The last thing we want is for those sword priests to know there's an elf in here.
She considered attempting the disguise she'd seen Ferran cast, but knew that would require some practice, so she used her tried-and-true method, putting on her favorite colors of red hair and freckled skin.
All right, let's go.
When they reached the top of the battlements, the abbot was waiting for them.
So, you could not resist one final confrontation with Mistress Fane?
I needed to learn what I could of Allie's plans once she leaves here, Carola replied without apology. I still have to get Jordan home somehow.
Of course, the abbot sighed. I both understand and regret the necessity of it. So, I presume you will be leaving soon as well?
Yes, Father. We can't afford to remain here much longer. But I wanted to ask you about alternative routes back to Mypoor. By land or by sea, even the most roundabout paths might be preferable to the main road.
The abbot raised an eyebrow.
Roundabout is putting it mildly. The abbey was built here specifically for its remote location. The plateau we are on is relatively arid and less hospitable than the lower regions of the island, which discourages anyone from building settlements too close. The consequence of that is we have relatively few paths in and out of here.
Carola glanced out toward the farmstead beyond the walls and the fields that were being worked by healthier pilgrims.
I have to say, Father, the ground doesn't look very arid to me.
Banbrook smiled.
The damp has only recently passed, so things are greener than usual, and we have made some adjustments over the years.
His smile dropped a notch as he looked across the camp
toward the old barn on the far side of the pilgrims' tents. "Is something wrong?" Kerla asked, following his gaze. "I noticed that you're not in the kitchens today."
"No," the abbot chuckled. "This takes precedence over my kitchen duties for the moment. Brother Hollum and three other monks went into that barn with several of those folk the pilgrims call the Blessed. Apparently one of them, a fellow named Travis, has agreed to answer Hollum's questions about what happened to him."
Kerla felt a twinge of sorrow. Travis was the name of one of Tesca's cover identities. It's a common enough name, she thought. That's why he chose it. But, Father, isn't Kelisandra keeping the Blessed away from you?
The abbot nodded. This seems to be some new development in the camp. This man Travis is one of the most recently healed. Perhaps he's not so willing to listen to Kelisandra as the others. And there are two others with him, family members.
He shook his head, curious.
Apparently, they call themselves the Triad Reborn.
The Triad Reborn? Wick asked, looking puzzled. My Da would call that heresy.
The abbot pursed his lips, looking disappointed.
A word such as that takes on a life of its own when spoken aloud, my son. We are too far removed from the camp to make accurate observations as to what they mean by the Triad Reborn, so I will ask you not to use that word again.
Wick flushed and looked away.
Father willing, the abbot went on, Hollum will be back soon with some answers.
There was movement at the barn.
Ah, there they are.
Kerla could see the four robed figures come out of the barn, their hoods raised, accompanied by another man, tall and slender, with thinning hair.
Is that Travis with them?
Banbrook squinted. I expect so. The Blessed live in that barn, although until today I would have said, rather, that Kelisandra was confining them to it. Perhaps this man is going to come inside with Brother Hollum.
The abbot's voice took on an eager tone at that prospect.
Perhaps, Kerla agreed.
Then a thought struck her, set in motion by her unexpected memory of Tesca.
Father, there's another question I have, and I may not get another chance to ask it.
Of course, Banbrook said, still watching the progress of the returning monks.
I came across a name in the registry that I recognized, a family that came here some 20 years ago, and apparently you were the one who interviewed them.
Oh, really? Banbrook chuckled. What was the name?
Carrick?
The abbot's smile froze.
The father was Dunstan Carrick, and he came here with two small children, Aidan and Rose.
The abbot turned his stunned gaze on her.
There was a woman with them as well, Moira Delane.
Well, the abbot stammered, that couldn't be anyone you know. As I recall, they headed south after they left here. Far, far south, as a matter of fact.
All the way to Locus, Kerla finished.
The abbot blinked.
How do you know that?
Kerla took a deep breath.
Because Aidan Carrick, Dunstan's son, returned to the Frieze around 4 years ago with a new name, Tesca Sicarius.
She ignored Wick's reaction and pressed on.
When I saw the names of the family, I realized who they might be, so I asked Jordan to find their interviews. But he told me they're in the restricted section, by your order.
How would Jordan know? The abbot began.
Then he sighed.
No, I shouldn't be surprised by that.
Father, why did the Carricks come here? At first, I was just hoping to learn more about my lost friend, but if those interviews are in the restricted section...
She spread her hands.
In a place like this, what knowledge is forbidden?
Knowledge that I deem too dangerous or unethical to pursue at this time,
the abbot replied, getting over his surprise.
Below them, the noise from the pilgrims' camp suddenly grew sharply.
What's that? Wick asked.
We're starting to open Lowgate to let Mistress Fane and the others depart, the abbot replied.
The pilgrims know the sound and always start moving toward the gate when they hear it.
He gave an approving nod.
At least we'll only have to open the gate once to let them out and Brother Hollum back in.
Then he turned away from them, walking slowly along the battlements, gazing down into the camp. Kerla frowned, realizing after a moment that they had been rather abruptly dismissed.
"Touched a nerve there, mistress," Wick said to her in a low voice.
"A more sensitive one than I'd expected," Kerla agreed. "Damn, now I'm more curious than ever."
"You're not the only one. Did Master Sicarius tell you he came here as a boy?"
"No, he couldn't have been more than 5 or 6 at the time, and he said his father was a merchant, constantly taking them from one place to another, both on the mainland and in the Frise. I think Tesca simply forgot."
"That's possible, I suppose. I was a few years older when my family moved to Kohain, and I certainly don't remember every day of that journey. Locus is the imperial capital, is it not?"
"That's right. Quite a distance from here."
"Didn't the abbot make it sound as if they headed straight there after leaving the abbey? Seems odd."
"It does indeed," Kerla agreed. "I suppose I'll have to add return to the abbey for answers to my ever-growing list. It's right after find Bakarutu and talk to Giacomo's family, assuming I ever find the time for that as well."
"You might, mistress. Elves are supposed to live a long time, aren't they?"
Kerla gave a weary laugh. "I suppose I'll find out." Then she turned her head, hearing a change in the crowd noise, and she quickly stepped to the battlements and looked down. The battlements extended a small distance beyond the wall, and she couldn't see the gate itself from here, only some 5 feet ahead of it. Directly below her, Ali Fane, Benato, and Clegg were leading their horses into the crowd of invalid pilgrims clustered around the gate. The pilgrims had blocked the road again, leaving nowhere for the horses to go, and a loud argument was starting. Crowded in, the animals had begun to grow upset. Clegg was shouting at the pilgrims, demanding that they be allowed to pass. A moment later, Ali cast a few coins into the air to get the pilgrims' attention. Then she threw a larger handful to one side, an enticement to move out of the way. But not a single pilgrim turned to follow. Instead, they glared at Ali, their pleas and prayers turning to angry calls. Kerla winced.
"Big mistake, Ali. They're pilgrims, not beggars. It's not coin they're after."
Wick touched her arm. "Hollum and the others are getting close now."
Kerla looked up to see the monks moving through the rows of tents that arced across the open field before the abbey gate. More pilgrims were clustered around the monks as they pressed ahead, but then she heard someone in the crowd shouting, calling to the others. For a moment, she could see the tall blessed, gesturing and shouting before the pilgrims drew close, blocking him from view, so she closed her eyes, trying to pick out the man's words.
"Oh no," she breathed, turning pale. "That member of the blessed's just accused the monks of trying to kidnap him."
"Oh, hells," Wick muttered, watching the crowd around the monks become more agitated, surging and growing in size as more pilgrims gathered. Then suddenly, one of the monks made a break for it, darting forward and shoving his way clear, his 3 fellows following suit.
"Oh, that was a good hit," Wick said with an excited laugh, as the leading monk slammed into a pilgrim, bowling him over. "Didn't think the monks knew how to brawl like that. Run, lads!" he shouted. "Come on, run! You can make it!"
The 4 monks pelted for the gate in a rush, the crowd of pilgrims slow at first to react to their escape. Then, with a roar, the mob was after them, moving more slowly, but with a growing, inexorable power.
"Go! Go! Go!" Wick shouted.
"Run, Brother Hollum!"
Kerla called, wishing there was something she could do to help him. The monks kept their heads down, making straight for the gate with surprising speed, racing between the rows of tents, a few pilgrims sticking their heads out as they went by. Then, as the mob came after them, these others struggled out of their tents to join in the chase. A moment later, the monks had cleared the tents and plunged into the cluster of invalids gathered near the gate, but their progress slowed when they reached the crowd that was already pressed around Allie and her companions.
"Caught between hammer and anvil," Wick said, his face tense, teeth bared, watching as the mob drew closer.
The monks began to shove through the invalids to reach the door, and while Carla was relieved at how quickly they were moving, she was appalled at their brutality.
"Like drowning men fighting to reach a thrown rope," she said. "This is horrible."
"That's nothing compared to what'll happen if the mob catches them," Wick said.
The noise and frenzy caused by the monks rippled ahead of them. The crowd nearest the door now pressed closer around Allie's group, sending Clegg's horse into a panic. Rearing up, hooves pawing at the air, the animal screamed in terror. Then it bolted, crashing into the pilgrims on one side and galloping along the wall, seeking a way to break into the open. The last shreds of order and civility broke. Benito's horse lurched forward, trying to follow Clegg's, but Benito was still holding the reins and he was dragged off his feet, disappearing beneath the frantic crowd. Allie slapped her horse's flank to send it in the same direction and ran after it, hoping to follow in its wake, but by now the crowd was too thick for the horse to easily press through. Screaming, it reared, lashing out with its hooves, but none of the pilgrims retreated, having no way to do so. Carla stretched her head over the battlements, trying to see what became of Allie, but as the crowd pressed in, Allie retreated against the wall and was lost to sight. There was no sign of Clegg. The only thing she could still keep track of was the group of monks who had put themselves into a tight diamond formation and were steadily pressing forward.
"Wait," Carla thought, "I've seen that formation before. Something's wrong."
"They're almost at the door,"
Wick called, craning his neck out over the battlements to look down as far as he could.
"I can just see the edge of it. It's opening, and they're in."
"Did they get the door shut again?" Carla shouted.
Wick strained to see.
"I think... yes, it's shut. They made it!"
He laughed, drumming his fist on the stone in excitement.
"The sun's hand was on them, for sure, getting them through that mess."
But Wick's words only increased Carla's disquiet. She thought about the way the monks had moved through the crowd, maintaining a tight formation, their strength and their speed.
"And they never let their hoods down. Oh, damn!"
"Get off the wall," she ordered. Wick stared at her in surprise.
"It's a trick," she shouted. "Get off the wall, now!"
Without waiting to see if he complied, she ran up to the abbot, who was standing with several other monks. All of them looked horrified at the riot that was now erupting below them.
"Father, I don't know what's happening, but those four men at the gate are not the monks you sent outside."
The abbot stared at her, dumbfounded.
"What are you talking about?"
She grabbed his arms and shook them.
"They're sword priests. You saw how fast they moved and how they stayed in close formation the whole time? Hallam and the others wouldn't have behaved like that, would they?"
Banbrook frowned, and Carla could see that he had noticed those things as well, but he hadn't put the clues together yet.
"Are you sure?"
"Yes, I'm sure. They're trying to get inside the abbey, and if they do, we're trapped up here on the wall. We've got to get moving."
The abbot nodded, his confusion clearing. He was not someone who handled surprises well. She'd seen that asking him about the Carracks, but he did recover quickly once the first shock had passed.
"Get word to the gatekeepers," he snapped to one of the younger monks. "The inner door must not be opened without my express order. Go!"
As the young man sprinted away, the abbot motioned for the other monks to head down as well, he and Carla following after them. Wick was waiting for her when she reached ground level, but then Carla heard the sound she feared, Lowgate's inner door being opened.
"No, no," called a voice. "The abbot said to keep it sealed. Close the door, close the—"
Then his voice was cut off, followed by shouts of alarm. Three of the robed men who had run through the camp bounded into the courtyard, armed with bloody swords. The one in front, stepping over the young monk who had given the abbot's command too late, had thrown his hood back, and Carla recognized Padraic, his features hard, his eyes wary. The other two took posts at the open door to stop anyone from closing it. A few figures staggered through the doorway into the courtyard. monks with bloody robes, pilgrims who'd managed to squeeze inside before the outer door was shut, and, to Kerla's amazement, Allie Fane, her clothes ripped to tatters, one sleeve of her jacket missing, her hair a matted tangle. But her sword was still in her hand, red to the hilt, and as she came through the door, the two sword priests flanking it fell upon her. It was the first time Kerla had seen Allie fight, and with a pang, she recognized elements of Teska's fighting style at once. Allie ducked and spun away from the sword priests, keeping both of them in front of her. But Padraic was directly behind her, his head coming around as he heard the clash of blades. Kerla bounded off the steps before she was conscious of what she was doing, hearing Wick's stifled oath as the guard came after her an instant later. As Padraic turned, his blade raised to cut Allie down, Kerla leapt for him, wrapping her arms around his leg. Padraic stared down at her in surprise.
"The elf!"
he shouted, adjusting to strike her instead. Kerla gave him a ferocious grin as she cast her new paralysis spell, and instantly Padraic's legs collapsed under him, taking them both to the ground. Wick stooped to pull the man off of her, but she waved him off.
"His sword!" she gasped. "Help Allie!"
The guard made an exasperated sigh, but did as he was ordered, scooping up Padraic's blade and stepping to Allie's side, forcing her assailants to deal with both of them.
"Almighty Sun, free me from this curse!"
Padraic snarled as she got one leg out from under him, using it to roll him over and get her other leg free.
"I'll kill you, elf! I swear I will!"
Panting, she stood over him, her gaze taking in the dead and dying monks in front of the door. In the tunnel below the gatehouse, there were at least four more bodies, and a red rage swept over her.
"You murdering bastard!"
she hissed, kicking him over and over, stomping on his face.
"That's for Jordan's nose, and this is for Brother Hallam, and this, and this, and this is for all of my people who've had to hide from the likes of you!"
Movement in the tunnel drew her attention. She saw the fourth sword priest coming at a run, but behind him, silhouetted against the light of the open outer gate, were the shadows of an angry mob. The sight sobered her instantly.
"Wick! Allie! Get back! Head for Midgate!"
The Kohaians didn't need any urging. Both had seen what was coming. Letting Kerla get behind them, they began a fighting retreat, the two sword priests pressing them close. The last sword priest came into the courtyard, quickly taking in the situation. He looked to have a few more years than his fellows. Kerla decided he was a lieutenant of some sort. Running up to Padraic, the man stooped to examine his bloody face. Padraic whispered something in his ear, and the man raised his head to regard Kerla with cold, pale eyes. Then, springing to his feet, he was after them.
"Three swords against two," Kerla thought. "Have to improve those odds."
The paralysis spell was quick, but she had to touch her target to make it work, and she knew the sword priests had seen what she did to Padraic. They wouldn't let her get that close.
"Got to be something I can cast from a distance. Rusting one of their swords would take too long. Need something quick, quick. Snap of the fingers, quick."
Ah!
Spotting a long tear in the sleeve of the sword priest engaged with Allie, she focused on one of the rough, fraying tatters fluttering loose. She made wide, obvious gestures with her arms and hands as she cast the spell, both to shape the pattern faster as well as to let the charging lieutenant see what she was doing. Then, with a final flourish, she snapped her fingers and pointed at the sword priest's robe. The man's torn sleeve suddenly ignited, his movement quickly fanning the flames. He cried out and fell back, beating at the sleeve with his free hand. Allie grinned and, without pause, darted behind Wick's opponent, slashing open the back of his leg. And as the man stumbled, Wick cut him down.
"Braylon!"
roared the lieutenant as he pounded toward them, his teeth bared. He skidded to a halt as Kerla raised her arms high, looking directly at him.
"One step closer and you're next, sword priest!"
Quickly, Wick retrieved the fallen man's blade, letting Kerla get behind him and Allie again as they continued their retreat toward the gate. The lieutenant walked forward, his pace matching theirs, until he had reached the body of his fallen acolyte.
"Heretics!" he called, his anger stern and unbending. "Heretics and fiends! All of you shall answer for his death!"
Kerla and the others did not bother to reply. Instead, once they'd gained enough distance, they turned and ran for Midgate, catching up with the last of the fleeing monks. All of the monks were carrying what few items they'd been able to grab as they fled. Kerla cast about with some desperation, looking for Jordan, then sighed in relief to see the youth ahead of her, helping to bring the stable's horses into Midgate. Standing at the foot of the gate was the abbot, breathing heavily, watching the last of his fleeing monks pour past him.
"Thank the Father you're safe," the abbot said, ushering them beneath the portcullis.
"Secure the gate," he called.
A moment later, the great metal grille dropped with a rattling crash, and behind that, the heavy oak doors were slammed shut.
"You must excuse me, child," the abbot then told her, moving quickly to the staircase that led up into the gatehouse above.
"Nice moves."
Kerla turned to see Allie Fane leaning against the stone wall, taking deep breaths.
"First you put down that one behind me, then the fire. Thought you needed more time to do your magic."
"Not this far north." Allie nodded, filing that information away.
"Well, you certainly keep your head in a scrap."
"You too. I was reminded of Teska, watching you."
Allie gave her the bittersweet smile Kerla had seen earlier today, as she tore off a shred of sleeve and wiped her blade clean.
"Why'd you do it?"
"Save you?"
Allie nodded, sheathing her sword. Then she used another strip of cloth to tie her hair back in a ponytail.
"You could have let that bastard cut me down. Triette knows you've reason enough."
Kerla shrugged.
"Maybe it's something Teska would have wanted. Or maybe I realized right now we need every blade we can get. Or, taking a leaf from Clegg's book, maybe I thought it would be useful for you to owe me one."
Allie's laugh held more rue than cheer.
"I've better things to do than guess which one is right. So I'll just thank you for the first, agree with the second, and, damn your eyes, honor the third. One, Kerla. You get one."
"One it is."
The two women studied each other for a moment before Kerla spoke again.
"I saw Benito get dragged into the mob by his horse."
"That's more than I saw," Allie sighed.
Now that her hair was out of her face, Kerla could see a bruise forming on Allie's left cheek, and her lower lip was split.
"And Clegg? I lost track of him. How badly are you hurt?"
The Fane heiress shrugged.
"Bruises, scrapes. I've had worse."
She smiled.
"There was this time on Narlos. Teska and I were on the run from Tanner Jack's boys, and—"
She broke off, sighing.
"Well, like I said, I've had worse."
She stretched her arms over her head, wincing, while above them, an alarm bell began to ring in the gatehouse.
This work is copywritten 2013 and has been written and recorded by John Maher. If you'd like to learn more about the Freeze, get yourself a bit of swag, or comment on this episode, please visit talesoftheleftand.com, where you can also find a link to our official Facebook page, and if you'd like, make a donation to help keep this series going. Thanks for listening.